you haven't read Proverbs 24 before in a long time, you might wonder what that has to do with Proverbs 24. I think it'll become clear as we read a little bit, though. In Proverbs 24, verse 1, we begin, Be not thou envious against evil men, neither desire to be with them, for their heart studieth destruction, and their lips talk of mischief. You know, that's a strong draw to want to not be a misfit from the world, isn't it? I mean, does anybody really like to be a misfit, to not fit in? You think about going through school, and you think about, I think back to my time in school, and you think about all the trouble kids get into. You think about not only the trouble, but several different things. You think about the awkwardness. You think about nervousness. Sometimes about kids not wanting to go to school. Sometimes kids wanting to go to school. Think about the friends that I hung out with after school back then or tried to. And, you know, you think about a lot of that draw that comes from the world. It pulls you like it's magnetic to you, doesn't it? It constantly is trying to pull you into it, keep you in it. And if you ever get out of it, and of course we know the way to do that is in Scripture. God's sent His Son so that we can get out of this lost condition, this misery, the world. If you ever manage to get out of that through the gospel, and the Bible tells us that there are a few that do, but if you ever do, and you decide to do that, you make that choice and you go through with it, it seems like that draw becomes that much stronger, doesn't it? Does anybody else feel that way? You come out of the world and man, it's always trying to reclaim you. We read about Satan in 1 Peter 5:8, how that he walks around and seeks, just like a roaring lion seeks maybe in the jungle. So he's always looking for prey. That's how Satan's always searching for us. And we should be afraid. We should realize the battle, as the Bible says. But we think about this here and the advice of a father to a son written here in the first couple of verses. He says, don't be envious against evil men. Don't want what they have. Don't want their place in the world, because that's what they have that we desire, we're envious of. He says, neither desire to be with them. Have you ever felt that pull to run with the wrong crowd? Not just kids, right? Yeah, I felt that in high school, also as adults. That crowd that you run with. We feel that pull, strong pull. He says, don't want to be with them. Don't desire that. He says, because their heart, notice verse 2, and it always seems, doesn't it? It's always fun, you know, especially if you're out of the world and you're in the church, you're looking back to the world, man, it seems like they're having so much fun. All the things they do that maybe you used to do, or maybe you never did, it still looks like fun either way. You know, man, they're going out laughing because they don't remember what happened the last night. We make fun of it, and I do too. I think, you know, it doesn't seem too smart to me, but there is some pleasure in that. And there is a draw to that when you think about it. That does draw us. I mean, who wouldn't like to just be able to escape at some point like that? There are draws to this world. They're valid. That is, that they actually exist. Notice what he says, though. And if there's anybody that could write from experience about these things, it would be Solomon, wouldn't it? Because he experienced all that. He says, don't desire that, verse 1. Don't desire to run with that crowd. He says, because their heart studies what? Yeah. You ever studied for anything? Maybe you're not like me, and when you study for something, you don't really have to use that much brain power, but I've got to use everything that I have when I study for something. And I think that's really what he's referring to here. They study destruction. That's what their life is about. You know, and usually when you're in the church, or even if you're not in the church, you're looking toward that crowd, especially if you're in the church and out of the world, you look toward that, you're really not thinking about destruction, are you? You're probably not thinking about how destructive... Would it help if I turn this a little bit? You're probably not thinking, man, I sure wish I could be miserable like they are. I wish I could be in that destruction. You know, there's a veil over that misery that they're really in. But I see behind that to the misery, and man, that's what I want. I want to run with that crowd so I can be miserable and just fall into destruction and have my life destroyed like I know that's going to happen to them. Is that what we say? No, that's not the part that draws you, is it? That's the part that Satan conveniently keeps hidden. That's the part he hides behind. He doesn't show himself. He shows something that isn't him, doesn't he? He makes it look attractive. But he warns him. He says, don't desire it. It may look fun, and certainly there's some pleasure in it. Solomon knew that better than anybody, probably. But he says, that crowd, their heart studies destruction. Their lips talk of mischief. He says, you want to do something worthwhile? Notice the next verses, verses 3 and 4. Through wisdom is a house builded, and by understanding it is established. And by knowledge shall the chambers be filled with all precious and pleasant riches. A wise man is strong, yea, a man of knowledge increases strength. We read verse 5 there too, and we'll read a little more on that in just a moment. But when you think about that house that he mentions here, he talks about the building of it, and he talks about verses 1 and 2. I think it's interesting that he starts out in that way, talking about those who are whose emphasis is on the wrong thing, or the wrong things. If I can make this thing work. Oh, by the computer. Thank you. The simple-minded. He talks about the destruction that lies in that. He says, if you really want to do something good, think about the house. Build your house, your home. He's not talking about the physical house. We know that already, don't we? We're talking about the Bible. We're talking about things that are worth more than the things, maybe the structures. We think about a house that might last here for a while. We're talking about that which will go on forever. He says, don't waste your time with that which is destruction and misery. He says, build your house. Spend your time and effort on that, on something that's worthwhile, something that's going to last. You know, he says in that first verse of our little text there, verse 3, through wisdom is a house builded. Boy, there's some advice for our world today, isn't it? Not just for the world, for us. Through wisdom is a house built. Proverbs 14:1, as we have up here on the screen, says that every wise woman buildeth her house, but the foolish plucketh it down with her hands. To act foolishly, live foolishly, to live for myself, and there'll be more about this in just a moment, but to live in a way that is not dedicated to building the house up, he says, just like you're taking it and just pulling it down brick by brick. It's like you're trying to destroy it if you're living a foolish life. But if you live wisely, you can have your home, can't you? But also kind of decide to not quite grow up and run with the world at the same time you're trying to raise your family, be a husband, be a wife. What's going to happen? It's not going to be the house that I read of here. Every wise woman buildeth her house. And this is we're not just talking about women's obligation in the home. Because he's talking to his son too. And we just kind of referred to Proverbs 14:1. He says, every wise woman builds her house, takes effort. Ask anybody that's ever built a house, does it take any effort, Terry? Lynn, does it take any effort to build a house? Or you just go out there and, show up about 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and, when it gets good and warm, or dew's all gone, frost is gone, kind of warms up during the day, and just kind of say, yeah, there's not a house there yet. Just keep coming back, and finally, oh, thrown up. So much fun, somebody just decided to do it, and you can get paid for it. No, that's a lot of planning, and, how many times does a homeowner change their mind when you're building a house? Never, right? Not ever. you take all that into account. You take the splinters under your fingernails and hitting your hand with the hammer and all the things that happen in building a house and the people you have under you working for you that you have to pay and if they show up for work, right? And you just go through all that. There's a lot of effort required in building a physical house, but that's nothing compared to building a spiritual house. Can you tell if a house has been... somebody's taken their time and built it well. Can you tell the difference between that and somewhere where you walk in and say, boy, somebody cut some corners on this house. Either they didn't know what they were doing or they were dishonest. Or maybe they're just wanted it built that cheap. Maybe they just didn't have any money. That could be the case too. But money is not something you have to have, thankfully, to build the home that God would have us to have. He says many foolish things tear down a house, but wisdom builds it up. You think about all the things that are able to tear down a spiritual house. There are many things. Edward and I are talking about termites right now. Both of us kind of been invaded by those creatures. And reminds me of a sister that one of the people in Job was a Temanite. She thought it was a termite. I just happened to look at it, and you know how you look, glance at something, and then glance away, you know, did I read that right? Nope, I didn't. I've done that before too, and that's not the first time I've heard that. But you think about all the enemies that you have to a home, water damage and foundational issues, structural issues like that. I mean, it's endless. The kind of maintenance you have to do on a house, it's daily, isn't it? It's all the time. How is a spiritual house going to be this any different? It's not. It's going to be more maintenance because it's more important. You know, you may be able to let a porch or something rot down if you choose to at your house. And, well, I didn't care anyway about that. Or a shed out back. I didn't really care about that shed anyway. But that's the thing about a home is that it's so important. You can't afford to let any part of that structure. You can't afford to let any part of it go. How many people do we see in this world that really go at the family in that way, though? It's kind of like they have a family, but it's kind of a afterthought. Oh, yeah, well, I'm going to get married and have a family, but my real life is doing what I want to do here. Well, I think we can all point out plenty of examples in our lives that as we see people doing their own thing when we should be doing God's thing. We should be doing things for other people, thinking about other people. But think about the house also that he mentions here. And it's established by understanding. It's built by wisdom and it's established by understanding. I thought it was interesting, don't you, that the word understanding, from what I was able to put together in the Hebrew and reading definitions and commentaries and things, it seems to come down to the word argument. The word understanding basically has that idea underlying their argument. He says, through wisdom, a house is built. It's raised up, right? It's erected through wisdom. That's how you build it. And by understanding, it is established. By understanding, that home is kept going. And it is one thing to build a house, another thing to maintain it, isn't it? You can build a house out in the middle of the woods somewhere and just nobody ever live in it, and just leave it and not think about it for even 5 years. What's it going to look like when you go back to it? It's going to need something, isn't it? I think I don't realize a lot of the time, you know, when you move out of a house or something, what happens to it. But when you keep up things like cutting weeds away from it, you know, constantly doing little things all the time that add up to something huge. You replace parts of it, piece of wood, there's a crack somewhere in the stone or mortar, you repair that at some point. You know, there are all these things that you're doing to keep that house going. You replace shingles, they tear off in a storm when they wear out. You're always doing things to keep it up. And we can't expect to just have our family and just kind of let them grow up on their own, can we, with no more effort? Just leave our kids to themselves. Oh, yeah, they'll make the right decisions. Right. Because that's what kids do, right? I had to have a lot of steering in my direction. I still made a lot of the wrong decisions when I was a kid. I mean, I did some stuff, but if my parents hadn't been guiding me, I would have done even more than what I did. So it's kept up by understanding. It's established by understanding. by understanding it, it stays there. I think I see a constant analysis of the home here. A constant debating within myself, perhaps. Am I doing the right thing? Did we handle the kids in the right way, that way? And I don't know if I'm missing it or not here, the exact idea, but the way it's written here, the verse, the way it reads, the context around it, and the way the word argument's used here, that are, or the actually kind of means argument in the fundamentally in the word. Does it take analysis? The husbands and wives have to talk. The parents have to talk. Should they talk and say, did we do that right? Did we punish too hard? Did we not punish hard enough? Should we punish our children at this time? How about children in the home? It's not all on the parents, is it? What do children think in the home? Do children ever wonder, maybe my parents are right in this situation? I think that's something that I don't ever remember asking that question myself when I was growing up. So if there are any kids in here, any younger, still at home, try to think better than what I did. I actually ask that question. Sometimes our parents are going to be right. Actually, the older you get, the more you realize we're right. I don't know. I guess I could say most of the time. No, I think it's a lot more than that. Probably. Well, parents aren't right all the time, though, because I know I constantly make mistakes. And that's another thing that parents have to realize, too, is that we're not the ultimate authority. God is. But we stand under God. We're not to be tyrants in the home in that way. But not to get off the subject, to come back, he says, by understanding it's established, and he says the house is built or brought erect, and then it's established or maintained. I think we've gotten that idea. I think we can move on. We talked about the maintenance of a house and on a home, and then we come to the next verse, verse 4. It says, and by knowledge shall the chambers be filled with all precious and pleasant riches. You think about, especially a king's house, think about Solomon, you think about David, think about their children. What must their houses have been like? Can you imagine all the silver and the gold and the fine things that were in their houses? Can you imagine the table that they probably sat down to and the silverware that they had, the food that they had constantly coming in? Can you imagine what didn't the Queen of Sheba come and see Solomon living in the lap of luxury, as we say? I don't know if we can imagine how richly they lived. He says, do you want your home to be like that? He says, don't waste your time on these things in the world that don't mean anything in the end, that are going to cause misery and destruction. He says, don't waste your time on that. Says, build your house. And if you build your house, guess what you're going to have? Happiness. How many people do you know in this world that you work with, that you're friends with, your family? They may be able to fake being happy from time to time, but that they're not really happy at home. Is that ever the case? I'd say it's mostly the case, at least out in the world. It's people looking for something, but they don't know what it is, or if they do know that it's God, we're constantly trying to find another way, a lot of people are, because we don't want to have to be subservient. We don't want to have someone to answer to tell us that I can't go out and do all these things that I want to do. I can't run with these people that I want to run with. I've got to give some of these things up. Yea, and all that will live godly in Christ Jesus, what does it say? Shall suffer persecution. We all know that passage. Does that sound like fun? It doesn't, does it? Not at all. But it's a price to living like Christ. And if we're going to build homes that God will be pleased with, that's exactly how we're going to have to live. It doesn't say we'll never have problems. I don't ever read in here where he says you won't struggle financially. I don't think that's what he's talking about here at all. He's talking about something different. Spiritual things. happiness in the home. Strive for something different. Knowledge is cunning and discernment. If you read on down too, just a few verses, as we're still considering verse 4, he says, "A wise man is strong, and yes, a man of knowledge increaseth in strength. For by wise counsel thou shalt make thy ward, and a multitude of counselors there is safety. Wisdom is too high for a fool. He openeth not his mouth in the gate." The gate, the place of judgment, right? Wisdom is beyond a fool. It's too high for him. He's concerned with baser things, simpler things, such as what he desires, and that's it. It says, "He that deviseth to do evil shall be called a mischievous person, and the thought of foolishness is sin. The scorner is an abomination to man. If thou faint in the day of adversity, thy strength is small. If thou forbear to deliver them that are drawn unto death, and those that are ready to be slain, if thou slayest, behold, we knew it not. Or if thou sayest, behold, we knew it not, doth not he that pondereth the heart consider it? And he that keepeth thy soul, doth not he know it? And shall not he render to every man according to his works? My son, eat honey because it is good, and the honeycomb, which is sweet to thy taste. So shall the knowledge of wisdom be unto thy soul." If you're out in this world and you're just doing what's fun, how much knowledge and wisdom are you accumulating? How much of that are you dealing in? Well, the answer's going to be none, isn't it? That's not what you're concerned with. I'm concerned with what I can gather to myself, what I can be to myself. But if you're going to have a home and have it as God would have it, if you're going to build a house or a home and you're going to keep it standing, and not only that, but you're going to fill it with all these precious things, not... You know, we've thought about building a house before, and we couldn't afford to build a house. We bought one already standing. But when you start thinking about building a house and what you're going to have in it, it's a lot of fun, isn't it? Think about what kind of sink you're going to have, what kind of faucets you want. Think about your walk-in shower or tub or whatever it is that you want. You know, all these things, how much money do they add up to when you... Start totaling them up, though. High as you want to go. But that's not what we're talking about here. He says if you want to be truly happy, he's talking about an equivalent to that on another level. Maybe not even an equivalent, because those things can't really make us happy. That would be what you'd want and the things that I would want. But just think about being able to go home in a home where God dwells. Where the parents are and the children are. Well, there's not always peace. I mean, there are going to be times, right? But where there's happiness. Again, where God lives, where the Bible's taught. That's an escape from the world. It's cut off from the rest of the world. So wealth and luxury. So if you want to fill your house with all these great things, all this prosperity. And he's not talking about just getting by like we so often do physically. Or is anybody not in here with me in that area? Is anybody in here not just getting by, it seems like, these days financially? I think probably a lot of us are, if not all of us are. So we understand that concept. But he says if you build your home spiritually as God would have it, you're not going to be just getting by spiritually. You'll be rich beyond measure. And friends, we know that if you have a home and you mold it the way that God has said to do it, and you do exactly what Solomon advises and what God advises in His Word, you will have something that nobody else or that not many have, very few have in this life when they have a home. Because you'll have that place of retreat from the world. That place of peace. Isn't it nice to have peace at home? I mean, to have true peace. I mean, you go out in the world and it may not be just battle every day, but there's constantly something that you're having to deal with, right? Having to stand up for what's right. You're having to butt heads with somebody over something. It may not even be something spiritual. But when you get home, you don't have to deal with bosses and employees or you know, whatever aspect and all that. You don't have to worry about any of that. You go home and there's peace because God's there, His Word's there. You have that in common and you're all in harmony because of that. Notice, as he says here, as to happiness and spiritual prosperity, how will you be? Rich. That's the best word. That's kind of a kid word, I guess, but it's kind of the best word I could think of because I thought of being a child and, you know, we didn't have a lot of money when we were growing up. My dad built a house out in the middle of the woods out of logs. He cut down logs and built a house out of it, a true log cabin. And had a sandstone floor in it that he mortared together. But we were happy. We had, I didn't realize it all the time then. I knew we were happy, but I wanted better shoes and better clothes. But I realize now that none of that really mattered at all. I mean, not at all. Didn't make any bit of difference at all. I think they were called Jordache or something, these shoes I used to wear way back then. I don't even know if that still exists now. But I used to wear those things, and they were cheap. And everybody else, it seemed like, was wearing Nikes and Reeboks. And I guess those brands are still around. I don't really care anymore because I realize those things aren't even important. But I didn't realize it then. But I'm glad that we grew up the way that we did. And these are the things that we need to focus on if we're going to be happy, if we're going to have spiritual prosperity and emotional prosperity. As to fulfillment in our home, we're going to be rich. We might be poor financially, but when you really look behind it, behind the curtain, what's there? The truth. The truth that none of these things the world says are important are actually important. Because when you die, when I die, we're all going to have the same thing. Nothing. What we came into this world with, that is, thinking in physical terms. Now, spiritually, that's a different matter if you're a Christian or not a Christian. Do you have a need to respond to the invitation this morning? That's all that I have for us to think on this morning. Solomon, the home, the things that he did about building a house, because that's where it seemed that he went with it in Proverbs 24, so that's all I wanted to point out. There's more that we could point out later after this, but obviously we're limited in time on Sunday morning. So if you have a need to respond in any way, maybe it's something to do with the home, maybe it's not anything to do with the home at all. It's still the opportunity right now to make your life right with God. Are you a Christian? If you are, why not come back if you've turned away? If you're not a Christian, why not come while we stand and sing?